The Bantu-speaking tribe in southern Africa. They keep some cattle and grow crops like squash and sugar cane, groundnuts. And we are going to see the teenage girls aged between, say, 14 and 15 go away from the village down to the river for the month after the gathering of the harvest. That's the time that they are most free during the year. Now, the initiation rites are a separation rite from childhood. They leave behind their old childhood name, and they become eligible for marriage, and they get a new name and new clothing and amulets that protect them from witchcraft. So it's a separation rite from the old childhood state through the period of no man's land of the initiation, and they come out of the initiation with a different status, a redefined role in life, and they are reincorporated into their society on a different level. At the same time, initiation rites in African tribes are a way of establishing and affirming tribal authority. The elders of the tribe organize and hold the rites, and the young people learn, develop, and reinforce their deference patterns to tribal authority. You know, in our society, we have a lot of teenage rebellion and old people are stuffed away in old folks' homes. That's not true in Africa. The old people have all the knowledge, all of the respect, all of the honor, and the young people must follow tradition. These rural societies are very tradition-oriented. Right, in the initiation rites then here, we see the boys watching the girls get ready to go away from the village. And they are holding these mala mala kudu antelope horns, which they signal with. They sound. And they make calls across the hills to announce to other villages that they're having these initiation rites. Then outside the village, they dance in a circle. These are all women of the tribe. And the women in white are the last year's graduates of the initiation rites. They're called Ndabi, means school mothers. And they're blowing whistles and waving wooden hatchets and wearing uniforms, and the drummers have babies on their backs. And these are the helpers at the initiation rites that lead the younger ones. They dance in a circle, making a lot of exciting music with the drumming and the whistling and the shouting and clapping. And then there's a dance where just two people dance in grass skirts, and the leader is spreading black medicine on the ground to sort of consecrate the ground. Black for fertility, black for black rain clouds. They always sacrifice a black sheep for fertility rites. This is, besides being an initiation ceremony, a separation rite, it's also a fertility rite. The purpose of the girls' Komba initiation rites is to ensure fertility. There's a large amount of barrenness or sterility amongst the married women, and so they're rather concerned about whether they will bear children, because 20 cattle are paid for the bride. But it's not really a bride price, it's a child price. If the girl doesn't bear a child, the cattle must be returned and the marriage undone. And the girl becomes a slave for the village, carrying water, cleaning out all the ashes out of the fireplaces, gathering firewood, and so on. So she's concerned that she will bear children, and the initiation rites are their way of guaranteeing that they will have children. They will hear voices of the spirits of the gods, and they will communicate with the gods, and they will have visions assuring them of fertility. So now the girls are down by the river. These girls attend missionary high schools. And so they're sort of bicultural. They attend the missionary high schools and learn about hygiene and reading and writing and the Bible. But back in the village, they do their non-Western initiation rites. And each of these consists of a mime done to the rhythm of the drum and the sounding of the horn. These are the girls' initiation instruments. And they have phallic symbolism, a sort of Freud meaning of the snake-like horn is used for a fertility meaning. And the girls are required to show deference to tribal authority by humbling themselves and bowing and so on. And then they do a series of nine mimes in which the body rises higher from the ground each time. It symbolizes growth of crops, growth of children, all of natural growth. First of all, they're doing this baby crawl across the river there in time to the drum, and then they do a dance which they call the crocodile dance, where they're on hands and knees and bobbing their head from side to side, making grunting noises. And they sing a song that says, "Be careful when you go down to the river to wash clothes, be careful of the crocodiles." As the crocodiles do bite limbs off. And then in this mime, they're symbolically gathering firewood and pounding it on the ground. When they make bread, they pound all day long with mortars and pestles out of maize to make porridge. And they're singing a song about the work they do. These rites symbolize the role of women in the society as horticulturalists, gardeners, gathering crops, gathering firewood, raising children, carrying water, pleasing the husband, tilling the fields. They have a variety of long, monotonous chores. Now, this is an interesting dance. It's the amulet dance, where they receive a bangle that protects them from barrenness by witchcraft. Many African tribes have a tremendous fear of black magic. It's a curse put on you by your social enemy, some human being who casts a spell using some form of magic. And you receive this, you hold out your arm and your leg and you do the magic dance, and you receive this amulet that protects you from sterility. It's one of the little ways in which they believe to guarantee fertility. And now they're upright from the ground, and they play the drum and the horn to signal for the next rite, in which they lock themselves together as if they were chained together in a line. And this is the way that they are handcuffed together over the head, behind the neck, when the police arrest them for violating passport regulations. If they go to town without the plastic passport, which is made by an American company, Polaroid, they are arrested and held without trial. And the song says, "Be careful when you go to the white man's town to carry your passport." There are many arrests. Now, in this mime, one of the girl initiates is hoisted shoulder high while the horn is sounded, and she's waving two sticks. And this has a certain anthropological meaning, because in the girls' secret hut at night time, the girls have to sit in pairs doing secret things. But notice that the body is now higher from the ground and the horn is being blown for the next mime. And they learn songs and secret formula and dancing. One interesting thing I discovered was that they learn about an hour's worth of, you might call it mumbo jumbo, but it's archaisms and foreign words and onomatopoeicisms, sounds that imitate other sounds. And they remember this. It's very important to them because it's a kind of a credential. When they go to a foreign, a strange village, like several miles away, and they're not known, they can recite this secret formula, and it shows they've been through the initiation rites, that they are indeed a Shangana Sama woman who has been through the important womanhood stages. And I tape recorded old women in the city who were working as domestics, who were from the Shangana Sangha tribe, and the recitation that they gave me on the tape, which lasts about an hour and has no meaning to them, is identical to that the girls are learning here in the rite. They remember that 60 years. It shows how important it is to them. Oh, and in that mime, you see, one girl has climbed a tree that has white sap, symbolizing his mother's milk and various other things. The important colors are red, black, and white. Red for blood and the sun and the gray clay earth, and black for death, and black rain clouds and fertility, and white for life and life-giving substances. And the other girl is in a sort of a fetal position there, while this one gets beaten with a stick and recites her secret formula. And this is another symbolic mime where water is put into a drum or a barrel and a skin is stretched across the top, and the old women puncture the skin with the sticks and they sing a song about childbirth, about the flow of water, the amniotic fluid flowing at time of parturition. And the girls are singing a song of when the baby is being born. So this is strongly a fertility rite to do with procreation, continuance of the race, of course, and wifely responsibilities to bear children, because children give the funeral feast. They don't have a social security system. Old people are respected and cared for by the young people, so you need young people. And a father collects cattle so that his sons can inherit them, and he uses those cattle to buy his bride. The son waits till he's 40 years old for his father's death before he can get married. The girl lies on the mat that separates her from the dust she knew in childhood. She's painted red with red ochre. And they dance around singing the song of childbirth to the rhythm of the drum. Now, these are secret rites, and this is the first time they are believed to have been photographed. And I had to get to know them for 2 years before they would let me in. And maybe that's just because I was white and perhaps neutral. You know, I'm not a man, neither a man nor a woman, I'm just white. The doctor comes out of the bush with various parts of the Datura fasta ulsa, hallucinogenic plant. It's a poisonous alkaloid that grows in that part of the subtropics. The seeds, the flower, the plant, the stalk are hanging around the doctor, and it's made into a tea that's administered to the initiates. It's a powerful hallucinogen. It's dangerous. The helpers are bringing clay squares. The clay squares represent regrowth of human hair, which is shaved off, because this is a separation rite. Lose your name, your old clothes, your hair. There is regrowth, a new name, an amulet, new clothes, new growth. The woman blows the horn, signal for the next rite, and the doctor comes with the helper, and she carries the potion in a shell. The shell is often used for a ceremonial container in non-Western rituals. And she's screaming about the magic and the spirituality of the drug. And each initiate is administered the hallucinogenic drug to the sound of fast drumming by many drummers. Each girl is required to have a vision of the fertility god. And she has it under the influence of the hallucinogenic drug. It produces an altered state of consciousness. Now in our society, people take drugs and jump out of windows and that sort of thing. It's very individualistic and there's no control. But in this society, this is a custom, and it's controlled by the elders, and they're all doing it together, and they all have the same attitudes, expectations, and motivations. And they are supposed to report a vision of the fertility god and hearing the voices of the fertility god say that they're going to bear many children and be successful mothers. Now, this potion that's administered, it so happens that it has a produces bluish-green visions in circles and whirlpools. Now, these are the geometrics of the optical system. You see these cones, these conical-shaped configurations in blue and green. Now, their fertility god is a bluish-green snake that inhabits the eaves of their huts. It's the snake Dendrophis subcarinatus, and they call it Shihunzi, the fertility god Shihunzi. Maybe you noticed at the beginning of the slides, they all had their faces painted blue and were wearing blue-dyed salimpors, or cloaks. Well, this is a blue ceremony, because they want to see the blue snake. And the blue snake is actually the insides of their eyes. And the drug makes them accessible to perception the blue-green spectrum of the rainbow. It's like a prism that only the drug acts as a prism that just lets through the blue-green. Other drugs let through the hot orange-red spectrum. So they found a drug that matches their snake. They found an altered state of consciousness medium that matches their fertility god. It's sort of complementary. Now, complementary to the altered state of consciousness produced by the drug is the drumming. It's a kind of rhythmic driving. Now, our basic brain waves are at the rate of 8.5 to 13.5 cycles per second. You can measure them on the electroencephalogram. The alpha waves, emanating from everybody's cortex, run between 8.5 and 13.5 cycles per second. This drumming is about that speed. It's very fast drumming on a lot of drums for a long period of time, many hours, maybe 10 hours. And so under the effects of the auditory driving and the drugs, they have the vision and hear the voice of the fertility god. Drums are very important in rituals. Around the world, we see that drums have a primary role in rites of passage, where people are moving from one life state to another life state. This drumming is very effective. It's very loud, very powerful, very hypnotic, and acts together with the drug. Plus, remember, they've been dancing for several hours. Dancing produces altered biochemical changes, physiological mutations of the EEG, and more perspiration, more cerebral circulation, there's less blood glucose as it gets used up, there's hyperventilation. The exhaustion lowers the threshold for the activity of the drug and the auditory driving. The threshold of resistance is lowered. Plus, these elders are shouting and screaming at them all the time. There is a certain hypersuggestibility going on. They are making suggestions. You're hearing the fertility god. You're seeing the fertility snake. And they sing Shihunzi, Shihunzi, Shihunzi. They're making suggestions all the time to these initiates, who are all motivated to have this vision. Now, if any girl doesn't have the vision or hear the voices, she's administered another dose of the poisonous alkaloid Datura fastulosa. And that gets rid of her doubt. A notch is cut in her plate and it's sent back to her mother, and her mother isn't allowed to mourn for her. Now, she's lying on the mat that separates her from the dust of childhood, and the bangle is waiting for her, and the new clothes are waiting for her, and she's wrapped in a colored blanket, and they're choosing which clay square to put between her legs, because that represents regrowth of hair that's been cut off. And they argue a long time over the clay squares. These rituals are very complex in the number of formulas, songs, dances, and ritual acts that they do. If it fails, if she doesn't bear children, they will then have a number of explanations, a number of causes, a number of faults to fall back on. They will say, we danced the song right, we used the wrong clay square, we sang the wrong song, somebody sang with a mistake. This is their scientific explanation of infertility. Not the husband's impotency, not the subtropical diseases of sleeping sickness, malaria, bilharzia from the snails in the water, sickness from the water that the cattle go in the village that they drink, but due to the error made in the complex rite, which is why the rite is complex. People seek an explanation of their condition. They want to understand life. They want to have a measure of control over life, over their destiny. So here we see three initiates lying under the blanket, and they're all under the drugs, and they're having the vision and hearing the voice of the fertility god. Around the world, people often communicate with their gods through dreams. The American Indian goes up the mountain and stars and exposes himself to the element on his vision quest so that he can receive his song from the bear spirit or the mountain spirit. So here, these African initiates of the Shangandatsanga tribe, going from childhood to womanhood, are hearing the voice of their fertility god and seeing the vision of their fertility spirit. And the elders are going to beat them with the sticks made from the datura plant, sort of tactile reinforcement, rhythmic reinforcement of the complementarity of the drugs and the drumming and the exhaustion from the dancing and the hypersuggestibility from the elders. They will be fertile. The price is high if they're not. There's no safety net. And then after the rites, their brothers and their families come and welcome them, and they go back to the village, and they have a great gathering, a beer drink. They drink this gray, frothy beer that has a lot of sediment in it. It's not very alcoholic. That they make from the maize. It's very nutritious, and they have an all-night-long dance with drumming and singing and celebration. And that concludes our little segment on the girls' initiation rites. We can take some questions, and then we can talk about some of their instruments that they use in the rites.
They practice female circumcision. They say they get...
No, not this tribe.
They get tremendous infections and suffering from that.
So that's done... Yes, they do have certain practices in the Nhanga girl's secret hut at night time, but it involves elongation, deliberate elongation of the labia minora. It doesn't involve clitoridectomy.
Now, the males go through a similar something?
Yes, they do. It's quite different. From the age of 9 to 17, they gather 400 at a time. It only happens every 3 or 4 years. And a special foreign witch doctor comes through from the Pedi tribe. And he takes them all out, and they build a lodge out in the bush that uses no drums to keep secrecy. And they are circumcised with a razor blade, which isn't always very hygienic, and they sometimes catch gangrene and sometimes die. But if they go to the white man's clinic, they're not recognized as men and can never get married.
Is that right?
Mm. I'm surprised they don't have a more ceremonial place to do this. It's just sort of out in the field.
Well, yes, of course, that can be a holy place to non-Western people. That's where they meet their gods. They do build a lodge.
For the boys?
Yes. Now the girls simply just do it out there. Yeah. And then return to the village where there's a special Nhanga hut, a large longhouse. But there's a girl's secret hut.
But they're exposed to the sun and everything else, there's no shade for them?
No. Now this is after the harvest, so it's in their fall, now spring.
Then does marriage follow shortly?
Yes. Yes, every Shangandatsanga gets married, except those who have, for some reason, haven't gone through initiation. If they become Christianized or gone to the city to be a domestic. Or in the case of the man, if he's chosen to sign up for wage labor before circumcision, or if he's become a Christian and gone to the clinic for circumcision and so on. But I would say 99% of Shangandatsanga people get married.
That's all arranged.
It's the natural thing to do.
It's arranged by the family.
It's arranged by the family. A man of 40 marries, is married to, say, a woman of 30, a woman of 25, a woman of 20, and a woman of 50. And he has, all their huts are in a circle around his hut. And each one is pregnant at 3 yearly intervals. And each one nurtures a child with mother's breast milk for 3 years before becoming pregnant again.
Must have a population explosion.
And because of the poverty of the protein, the lack of nutrition, and there's not much meat available, so that polygamy of multi wives is it's an economic subsistence, nutritional thing. It's not a religious thing. But the missionaries interpret it as a religious thing, you see, but it's because it's practical. And the missionaries encourage them in monogamy, and then they have a child every year, and the babies die because they don't get enough nutrition.
As long as they nurse, they won't conceive again, is that it?
Yes.
Because of the diet, mostly?
Exactly. Uh-huh. That's it.
Is AIDS a problem in this area?
No.
This would imply then that there would be a lot of men who probably are not married.
That was the idea. It was the warrior. It was the warrior nation. That all young men became warriors and went to battle and got killed.
Mm-hmm. How are the new names selected for the girls?
That's a good question, but I don't know the answer.
What is the cause of the infertility? Is the father, I mean, are they aware that that's a possibility?
No.
No?
No, don't consider it. No, it's a chauvinistic society.
What took you there, Tom?
Well, I got a master's in musicology at Cal State Hayward in 68, and I had already done some band teaching in junior high, and I wondered what to do next, and the professor said, well, you play the marimba, xylophone, marimba, vibraphone player, mallet player. And he said, there's an interesting xylophone playing tribe that make these big xylophones in Southeast Africa. Why don't you go and study their music and enjoy their xylophones and live among them for a while? So I lived with them for 2 years with the witch doctors and the medicine men and the chiefs and the headmen, and learned about their religion and subsistence and musical instruments, and was able to trade some.
Not too many white people there with you?
No. Some of them had never seen a white person.
Is that so?
They have in the bush. 2-4 years I lived with them. It was a very amazing, wonderful experience.
Yeah.
I loved it.
Were you married at the time?
Yes, and my wife got tired of me being away and moved on to her life.
Nice.
It was the days of Gloria Steinem, and leave your husband and children and fall to yourself.
Kind of a hard life, isn't it?
And I was away, and so we came under the influence of Women's Lib, and so the being there cost me my marriage, which I always regretted, but I've always kept in touch with my daughter from that marriage, mm-hmm. who's now in third year of psychology at Humboldt State. Mm-hmm.
Does this initiation, the men and the women separately, make a noticeable change in them other than those you've discussed? I mean, their sense of taking responsibility or just their, what they would be, their outlook.
Society views them in a whole new light. They're children up till then. And they come and it's their first menstruation, which is 2 years later than in our society. And after that, they're women and they can get married and they can have children. So, because society views them, all of their significant others view them in this new phenomenal way, then they view themselves in that way too.
Ready to take on responsibility.
Yeah. But it has several functions. It reinforces their definition of themselves in the tribe as horticulturalists and raiser of children and providers. And sexual pleasers of the husband, there's quite an emphasis on fertility and sex and virility, and so on. And it's also a fertility right to please the gods and to ensure fertility. And it's a separation right from childhood to womanhood, a right of transition. It's highly symbolic of all their beliefs and values are reinforced in this right.
It must be that married women with children are happy because they seem so excited to go into this initiation.
Yes, they're very poor but happy. They don't have taxes, they don't have cancer, they don't have heart attacks, you know, they don't have ulcers. They're happy.
But the girls bear children very young, do they? Yes. Married and bear children?
There is some wellness, there is some unhappiness. Let me not paint a, you know, the noble savage glowing picture. Their children die in vast numbers.
Does the disease have anything to do with the infertility? Would the infertility have anything to do with venereal disease?
There is both sterility amongst the women and high infant mortality. They don't name the children until the child is old. Uh-huh. Then they have a special naming ceremony and that with a dance and a song. What was your question?
I mean, whether the infertility has anything to do with the venereal disease.
No. It's subtropical. It's poor nutrition, ignorance, and subtropical diseases.
In other words, they do not go on this ritual thing until a young woman begins to menstruate.
Barbara, would you change the slides with the one on the bottom?
This is a...
The menstruation occurring later,
oh, really?
Some scientists believe, 2 years later, is probably due to the subtropical climate and heat.
But I mean, that's when they go on this journey, though.
Yes. Yeah.
But the girls have developed. They are menstruating by the time they do this, are they, or not?
It's the fall following their first menstruation.
But they certainly are physically developed.
Very big girls.
Yeah, strange,
very
isn't it?
Big, strapping girls.
Different from us.
I'm amazed they let you take their pictures. They must not be
self-conscious
at all. When
a baby dies, they do a special dance and a song called Ngeli Ngeli. And they bury the baby in a broken pot. And when they make pots. And they put the pots in the fire. And some clay pots survive the fire and are used as pots. And some clay pots come out that are broken. And when you roll them along the ground, they go Ngeli, 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 Ngeli. It's the sound of a broken pot. And so when a baby dies, they sing the song, Ngeli, Ngeli, make it through the fire. The baby is a broken pot. And it's buried in a broken pot.
Is the male child valued over the female?
No, not especially, because the women are very valuable. In both the societies I've studied, African and Eskimo, the women are extremely valuable. The women are the providers, the nurturers, the ones who sustain.
And who bear their children.
Yes.
Is there a religious connotation to circumcision?
It's a separation, right? It's a part of the body you can detach without, you can't detach your ear or your nose or your hand without losing a, you know, a certain facility. It's a part that you can detach. Of course, all Americans do it. It surprised me because I'm English and it doesn't happen in England. In England, it's only common amongst Jewish people. We don't really know why we pay the doctor $75 and have our babies cry in terror and pain to do this thing. It's cosmetic in a marriage because you want your boy to be like all the other boys in the locker room, right? Is that it?
It's being questioned medically whether it's really the thing to do.
Yeah. Well,
questioned.
I'm not a doctor, so ask somebody more knowledge.
They used to say cleanliness.
I'm getting a little bit out of my depth.
Cleanliness is what they always say.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Would you like to move on to the instrument? Okay. Did you put the other two? Yeah.
Lines?
Okay.
Oh.
I've got it the wrong way around, so you want to put it back the other way. Yeah. The area, well, never mind, we can't reverse it, so we'll just move on. This is the notched friction bar. It's a curved stick with a rattle stick that you rub. And as you can see, the chief's aide carries it in his shirt and pulls it out when there's an old man's meeting, where they're discussing village boundaries and the disposition of the cattle and so on. This notched Shisambi friction bowl is easy to make, it's cheap, it's portable, produces interesting music, and it's used by the chief's aide. Here's his wife, and these are the huts they live in, round conical shaped huts with thatched roofs. The mud walls get rained out, and they save the roofs and carry them across the field singing a roof-carrying song and put them on new walls. And this Shisambi notched friction bowl is rubbed with a rattle stick that has fruit shell leg rattles on. These fruit shell leg rattles are made from the same Nsala fruit that they make liquor out of, the rattle stick of the Shazambian obstruction bowl uses the identical seed. So while the man is playing his notched friction bow, the girls run and get their leg rattles and dance around him. And I asked them why they did this. And there's a belief in the supernatural power of the music. The girls believe that seed to seed, supernatural power is being transmitted from the male with his stick, somehow through the air with the music, into the bodies of the women, strengthening them. It doesn't impregnate them, but it makes them more fertile. And so they run and they get the leg rattles of the seeds in and they dance around the player. And to benefit from the therapeutic power of the music. And here's the being played in duet by two elders. There's high respect for the old men. And then this is the Shetende gourd bowl, which is used by the wandering minstrel. And he carries news from village to village. He comes into the arena and he dances in front of the chief's hut. And he jumps up and down and screams and amuses everybody. And he says, you're a bad chief. You let your cattle come across the river and trample on our crops, and we're going to come across in force tonight and burn your village down. And the chief laughs and smiles and feeds him because he, being a musician and singing it, he has diplomatic immunity. You can say anything you want. You can say things that you and I wouldn't dare to say to the chief. And I discovered that most of these wandering minstrels are aberrant in some way, are psychotic or epileptic, that they are channeled into this role by a society to give them a job to do, that they are amusing and entertaining. And whereas we lock such people up in our society or put them away, there they channel them into the task of the wandering minstrel who carries the news like a walking newspaper across the territory. And he gets a free meal and free beer and a free hut for the night, maybe alone with one of the chief's wife, and then he moves on to the next village carrying the news from that village. And then he has apprentices, like this young apprentice here. Boys who have seizures or in some way are different, they stammer or they're, and they are apprenticed to him. Now this is the Unkangala bamboo bowl, which because of its bamboo construction is straight. The organology of non-Western instruments is dependent upon their materials, and bamboo cannot be bent. Now this is the girls' bowl, made and played only by girls, with a very thin cut end. And there's clapping and singing, and the bow accompanies it.
You know how to play that one?
I just noticed it's broken. I guess the wood dries out. It has a twanging sound, a little lighter than this one does.
Do women with emotional or psychotic problems or physical problems have any role like that?
That's a good question. I never even thought of it. I don't know. One time that the man plays the girl's bow is on his wedding day. And here he's taking his two brothers to the wife's village to collect his bride and take her to his father's village. He's wearing the appropriate costume. And the xylophones are played by men in the tribe who have traveled, because the xylophone is a foreign influence from the Shopi and the Kahoza and the Venda. And they generally play one rhythm in the left hand, another rhythm in the right. It's wood, hardwood from the trees that grow on the coast, rosewood and mahogany, and they're cut into bars and dried over the in the smoke over the fire. Mm-hmm. And then the gourds are grown in the garden, and they match the gourd to the bar. When they blow across the top of the gourd, it must make the same note as the bar.
Oh.
And the bars are tuned in a special tuning from a master xylophone kept in a special hut. And they have orchestras of the large bass ones and the tenor ones and the alto ones and the soprano ones. And they play 24 at a time. Okay. The men who have rattles and dance and sing. And it's a very awe-inspiring, I mean, you come 3 miles from the village and the fires are burning and you hear all of these xylophones and the roaring of the drums, and it's a very inspiring sound. And they play all night long. And then they use reed flutes or metal flutes or bamboo flutes, and here's Chief Chivani in the Savasa district up in the mountains with his council.
They're dressed in Western style, aren't they?
The missionaries came in with old suits from the city that had all kinds of diseases in them and handed them out, so every man's got one suit, and they're told that's a Christian way to dress, and they wear it rain or shine, and they get pneumonia. They used to wear leather skins that dried off, and that they had alternate skins for.
But the women don't. The women stay in their own.
Yes, women are more traditional.
You're right.
Yeah. They go to mission churches sometimes, but they call the mission church the place of nonsense. The African word for it is the place of nonsense. Because it's a tone language that they speak that goes up and down. It has a middle, high, and a low. And the missionaries took Wesleyan hymn tunes and put Shangan and Songa words to it. They go up when they should go down, and down when they go up. And in this language, Shangan and Songa, the meaning is dependent upon tone.
Can you speak a few words of it?
She manji manji shalom sungeri marahaya kosa seka.
Meaning?
Meaning, let's go to church to sing the hymns of the white men.
Uh-huh. Can you see what year this research is from?
1968 to 1970. And of course, in 20 years, there's no doubt been some changes. And the missionaries that I'm speaking of are 19th century missionaries.
Oh, yeah.
Today's missionaries, the young people we send abroad today, are highly trained, highly educated, very culturally relative, and much more informed. Little kalimba thumb pianos are made from flattened umbrella spokes, bicycle spokes, and nails. By men and boys only. Each of these instruments is sex and age specific, played by a certain group of people. And they have several song classes of vocal music according to age and sex. And as one grows older, one learns different classes of songs, children's songs, initiation songs, beer drink songs, exorcism songs, possession cult songs. And the witch doctor's drum is used for chasing out possessing spirits. The patient is put on a blanket with Dutch urafastuosa drugs in embers burning and is smoked. And the patient is drummed at all night long. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da in fours, or for a different spirit in threes. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. The witch doctor's drum is black because he tunes it with a burning firebrand, and it's easy and portable to carry around. And we notice this flat round drum is used by healers the world over. Siberian shaman use it, in Guatemala they use it, perhaps because it's solar significance, or perhaps it's merely because it's portable. But this is the same drum as he's holding, and he's holding a hyena whisk. Tail mist, and he's wearing a white coat because the clinic came through the previous week and handed out penicillin and cured a lot of people. So he wants some of that power. So he got himself a white coat.
Uh-huh. Oh yeah.
And another witch doctor with his wives. Another one with his wives. How are we doing on time?
It's 12:30.
So we've got 10 minutes, is that it? Or 5 minutes?
No, we're supposed to quit.
minutes.
No, we have 10 minutes.
10 minutes? 11:40
to 12:40. Okay.
Okay. Now, an interesting anomaly in this tribe is that it's only middle-aged women who play the drums, amongst the Shangan and Sangha. But the boys go to drumming school and the girls don't. And you often come across this kind of conundrum in non-Western society. Here's my interpreter, the son of a chief, and he's now cultural minister for culture for the Shangan at Sangha.
Really?
Yeah. And he invited me to go back.
Were there missionaries in the area where you
Swiss,
were?
Swiss missionaries. Swiss. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very good people. Wonderful clinic, wonderful school. They were hospitable to me. And very good with the tribe. This is a school. The schools don't have any pencil or papers, and the teachers can barely speak English.
There is no written language then?
At the university you can learn a written version of it, but these people haven't learned it. I spent 6 months at the university in Johannesburg learning, going to classes with blacks, trying to learn the language, preparing myself.
Do the missionaries teach them another language, French or what, the Swiss?
If they go to school, they're forced by law to learn Afrikaans, which is an antique Dutch of the nationalists, mm-hmm. The Afrikaans. They're rather racist. This is the national dance of the Shangan Sangha, where they wave a baton and they point out people in the audience and make jokes about old Havana's just got himself a fourth wife. He can't handle so many wives. Let's all feel sorry for old Havana and so on. And they make jokes about people in the audience. The drum is British military style and it's copied from the models that they saw in the Zulu Wars. It's not really an African drum.
Yeah, uh-huh.
They just copied it. And these are their own drums. Magnificent, beautiful carved drums that are carved whole out of the tree trunk with the handles on them. And a pot of beer is placed in the middle at a beer drink. And the first sample is taken by the host to show it's not poison. Mm-hmm. And the second sample is sent as a token to the chief. Then the elders are served according to their age sets. How many gardens ago they graduated from initiation rites. And then the young people are served last. Beautiful set of drums. Mm-hmm. So this is a social beer drink. The beer drinks are where weddings and funerals and all kinds of social transactions take place. At a wedding, all the in-laws line up, and one side says, "What a wonderful worker you're getting," and she is a great nurturer and sustainer, and you are getting a bargain, and your cattle are just mangy and no good at all. And the other side is saying, "She's lazy. We know that she never does any work, and we gave you our best cattle," and so on. And so they're making this bargain by shouting and singing songs at each other across the arena of the social beer drink as the bargain is struck. This is the boys' drumming school where the boys learn drumming and they have to make certain drums. And they're sent to the boys' drumming hut and they have to bring back a drum that says and they have to find the drum that speaks that little sound and they have to bring it back and show it to the chief's brother who runs the boys' drumming school. What actually happens at the drumming school is the boys learn tribal rhythms. The girls just learn them as they grow up. These two boys are found skipping along the street, singing a song and shaking the rattles to different rhythms. Canadians ran this missionary for teenage girls, and the girls are not supposed to do their native dances, but they did them for me. And the stilt dancers are spirits at the time of the harvest. And the fisherwomen celebrate a good catch with a Thanksgiving dance. And then we move from the rural area to the city, where the men do leave the tribe in the rural area and stand up in the gold mines and make their xylophones over again at the gold mines. And on Sundays, they're allowed to gather and play for each other, tribe for tribe.
They're musical people, aren't they?
Very, very musical. Music has very great meaning to them. It permeates their life. There is no ritual or transition or ceremony without its own body of music, its own instruments, its own songs, its own dances. Music has great meaning. It's not that they are born more musical or more rhythmic. We're all the same, all of us humans. We're just emphasized more from childhood. That's me sitting with the whites.
Yeah.
There's great respect for the elders. We've now moved to Durban on the coast, which is among the Zulu, and here's a typical South African policeman, and they generally tend to be rather racist and unfair.
Oil tanks, I guess, is
it? The oil tanks are used to refuel the American Navy, but the blacks on the ships are not allowed ashore. The American authorities won't let them ashore because they get ill-treated ashore. And the Zulus were great warriors 100 years ago and still demonstrate their old spears and shields.
What's the capital of Mozambique?
Lourenço Marques, great port. So these Zulus number 6 million, and they dominate the blacks in South Africa.
Yeah.
If you took the whites away from South Africa, you'd have black tribe against black tribe.
That's the Buthelezi group?
Yeah. The black tribes have no unity. Very, very little unity. They're trying to seek it. And we have an African specialist here with us this week. Are you here today? No.
Young woman?
Yeah.
Never met her.
But she says they're trying to seek unity, but it's going to take some time. They have such different customs. Those who don't eat fish hate those who do. Those who have circumcision hate the Zulus who don't. Okay.
Well, we thank you.
We have the double iron bells. Blacksmith makes for the secret societies in the jungle. And we have the lutes that are used to accompany song. And the talking drum that you squeeze the strings and it changes the pitch of the head so that you can send messages by changing the tone higher and lower to follow the speech tone.